I got to talk. I gotta tell what I feel. I gotta talk about my life as I see it.
Biggie.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell.
I'm not worried about work. I'm worried about robots.
On 920 The Game.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah, that's right. We're not worried about work. We're worried about the robots. Wildcard Wednesday here on the Mac Attack. I'm Ryan McKinnell. That is Mark Seidel across the way. And yes, it is March Madness, but we can't impede on Wildcard Wednesday. You know Wildcard Wednesday. You got all the off-kilter stories that I've been saving throughout the week. You got some sports stories sprinkled in there as well. I got a really interesting story in terms of VGK, your Golden Knights, the annual Players Award, Player survey was released from the NHL Players Association. So we got best hair, we got best shot, we got best trash talker, and we have best arena. So I think you imagine maybe got some VGK ranks in there. I think best hair. I mean, how could William Karlsson not be on that list?
Yeah.
So we will check in on that in about 20 minutes. But we also got a lot of stories around the entertainment world, pop culture, and that for here on Wildcard Wednesday. But, Mark, it is March Madness. Tomorrow, the tournament does, I guess, I mean, it's officially underway. The play-in game started last night. So that is happening, but obviously tomorrow is the big day. I'll be down. Oh, programming reminder, no Big Mac Attack or no Mac Attack Thursday and Friday, right? We are going to be preempted. We are going to be taken over by the tournament.
Yep.
Every game will be played here on the game from essentially 9 to 9, right? That's about the window?
9 to 9. Yep.
There you go.
12 hours.
Yes. Yes. If you're not listening to the games, if you're going to be watching them or whatever the case may be, I'm going to be down at the Westgate tomorrow with Steve Cofield for Cofield & Company. We're going to be kicking off March Madness down there. Got all sorts of good things happening for you. So if you want to come and hang out or say hi, we'll be down there. How's your bracket looking, man? I mean, I know you got North Carolina winning.
I do.
Okay. And I have Duke winning just because I'm a, you know.
You're wrong.
Well, fine. But, you know, I'm the casual fan. I'm here for Zion. This is the Zion show for me. The next 3 weeks are Zion Fest 2019, and I'm watching this kid before he goes into the NBA. It's similar to
the next 3 weeks?
Well,
I've only got him playing until March 28th.
Look at you. Out early.
Sweet 16.
Okay.
They lose to Virginia Tech.
Okay. All right.
A team that's played them well this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Let's do that. Let's start with the Sweet 16. Let's start with the Sweet 16. And let's start out east. Who you got landed in your Sweet 16? Now you said we already you led with Duke and Virginia Tech.
Duke and Virginia Tech, and on the other side Maryland and Michigan State.
Okay, so we're the same on that.
Uh huh.
All right, let's jump down to the west.
I have Syracuse beating Gonzaga.
Really?
In the first weekend, so Syracuse and Florida State.
Okay, I actually like that because I'm a Big East guy, so yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Syracuse, Florida State, and Texas Tech and Michigan.
Okay, we veer here. I got Murray State losing to the Zags in the Sweet 16.
I've got Marquette beating them first round.
Okay, all right.
They've got one player who's good.
Yep, and that's what I'm going on. I'm going on that one player. And you know, you got to pick upsets here and there. Like, and I just felt like, okay, that's where I'm going to plant my flag, Mark Seidel. I'm planting my flag on Murray State.
Yeah.
Other than that, just, yeah. One dominant player. Then also, I mean, listen, I'm essentially the girl that is picking wins and losses by the mascots. That's essentially my system. Now, it's not as juvenile and ridiculous as that, but it's pretty close. Like, I have Buffalo going to the Elite Eight strictly because of Khalil Mack. It's the year of Khalil Mack. So I'm trying to ride those good vibes for all Buffalo, right, and get them in there. So I have Buffalo and Michigan in the Sweet 16, and I actually have Buffalo beating Michigan. I've lost my mind, Mark. I have Buffalo going all the way to the Final Four.
It hasn't happened before.
I'm obsessed with Khalil Mack.
And they're a six seed, so.
Yeah, sure.
We've seen crazier things.
Thank you. Make me feel a little better about that. Yeah. Let's head out south.
All right.
I got Virginia and Wisconsin meeting in that Sweet 16 matchup at the top. Who you got?
I got Virginia and Kansas State. I've actually got Oregon beating Wisconsin.
Okay.
That's my 12-5 upset.
Okay.
Oregon coming off the Pac-12 championship, and Wisconsin losing in the semis, I think, in the Big Ten. So,
right.
Oregon, I think, is a little underseeded.
Okay. All right. What about in that other part of the Southern bracket?
Purdue.
Yeah.
Purdue and Tennessee.
Okay. How far do you have Purdue going? Because that's the same matchup I have.
I've got Tennessee actually beating Purdue in the Sweet 16.
Really? Okay. Yep. All right. I got Purdue going a little farther. I got them going to the Elite Eight. All right. What about in the Midwest? What do you got?
North Carolina and Auburn.
Okay.
I've got Auburn beating Kansas in the round of 32. And then Houston and Kentucky.
Okay. All right. I got my other upset. I got three upsets, obviously. Buffalo, and I'm rolling Purdue. And then I'm taking Wofford. I don't know. Just, you know, the player.
Yeah,
it's not gonna work out.
I've got Seton Hall beating Wofford in the first round. So I guess that's, you know, a 10-7 is not really that big of an upset. No. But
and I haven't looked at the line on that. I wouldn't be surprised if it's
if Seton Hall is favored in that game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. What's your final four?
Final four is Michigan State and Michigan.
Okay.
So that would be kind of crazy. And then Tennessee and North Carolina.
All right. I got Purdue, North Carolina, and Buffalo, Duke. And then I got Duke and North Carolina in the national title.
I've got Michigan and North Carolina. And final would be a rematch of the ACC Big Ten champion, whatever they play.
It would also be a rematch of the timeout game.
Yeah, it would be.
The national title of what, 93?
Michigan beat North Carolina. No, that wasn't last year. 2 years ago when they played, North Carolina beat Michigan.
There you go.
On their way to a national championship.
Tell me about it.
I will. You got time?
Got time. Yeah, no, I'm excited, man. I'm excited. A lot of cool storylines. A lot of really good players. Obviously, mentioned Murray State. And obviously, there's good players, you know, in the power conferences as well. But it just feels like an interesting, balanced tournament where a lot of storylines can come out. The number one storyline that I want to see, going back to number one, I want to see Duke North versus North Carolina. You started this. This is your fault.
I think everybody. I mean,
you were the one that hit me with that nugget that they've never played in the tournament.
They've never played in the tournament, This is a tournament that both teams have been in, you know, pretty much every single year for the past 40, 50 years, and to not, you know, just even stumble into a matchup.
It's wild.
In the round of 32 or something like that, or Sweet 16, they're usually never in the same bracket.
No, right.
They always make it a point to separate them. So, the only way they could meet up this year would be for all the marbles.
Yes, please let that happen. I need that for so many reasons.
Awesome.
Yeah, I need that for so many reasons. I need it for inner office turmoil. I need it for entertainment on multiple levels. I need this matchup. And also the improbability we're talking about, they've never met in the tournament. Ones rarely meet in the final.
Yeah.
So a 1-1 matchup would be kind of cool from that. All right, let's talk about real important brackets. I saw this from SB Nation. And this got me way more triggered than any seeding. Like, I'm way more triggered about the seedings for this bracket than I could ever be for the actual NCAA tournament, and that is the best cereal bracket. SB Nation put it out. I'm just going to start on the left side of the bracket. Obviously, we're talking breakfast cereals. Cinnamon Toast Crunch coming in as a 3 seed.
Already it's wrong.
I mean, it's beyond wrong. Like, first of all, the general consensus, Mark, it's not you and I. It's all of Twitter. Everybody was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
In no way is Cinnamon Toast Crunch a 3 seed. It's the overwhelming 1 seed. If we had just give them the damn trophy.
Yeah, I mean, not only is Cinnamon Toast Crunch the cereal awesome, but the milk that it leaves afterwards is incredible.
That's right. The discharge, which is a great word. It's like moist.
The after milk.
Yeah, the after milk. The discharge milk.
Yeah.
Is delicious.
It's great.
It's incredible. What other cereal leaves you with that sweet of discharge? I'm going to roll with this all show. It's so gross.
There's not another cereal out there. Even like the chocolate that leaves you like chocolate milk.
Yeah, no.
Still not better.
It's good.
It's good.
I'm not going to besmirch the name of a Cocoa Puff or a Count Chocula, but let's be real here.
Yeah.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch was, you know, literally designed in a laboratory, I would imagine.
Uh-huh.
Not saying it's actual food. I'm just saying it tastes delicious.
Oh, it's incredible.
Just mealing on cinnamon rolls the whole time. Here's the thing. That's the 3 seed. The 1 seed.
Probably like Cheerios or something.
No, Cheerios is actually set in the 2 seed, which is pretty lame.
Oh, that's, yeah.
It's stupid.
You have to like dump sugar on your Cheerios to make them even edible.
How's the discharge on a cereals, on a Oreo, or
on a Cheerios? Damn
it, Cheerio milk. Yeah.
It's gross, pretty much. You dump that milk out
right
when you're done.
I don't even know if it could be salvageable by putting it on top of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
No.
I think it's just a waste.
Yeah.
Number one is Lucky Charms. What is that? In what world? In what world?
Cereal with marshmallows in it, in all, is the most overrated cereal ever.
I agree. I'm not gonna kick it out of bed.
Dehydrated marshmallows in my cereal.
Right. I'm not gonna kick it out of bed, but I'll say this, which I feel like is like an automatic demotion in terms of any potential one seed. Like, it gets worse when you put milk on it.
Uh-huh.
Like, Lucky Charms is best dry and just kind of mealing on it as like a, you know, a dessert or something.
Yeah.
You put milk on it, it gets all soggy, and like you said, the disintegrated
Yeah.
So Lucky Charms is the one seed, joke. Cheerios 2, joke. 3, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, obvious winner on that left side of the bracket. Apple Jacks at 4.
Apple Jacks is overrated too.
Fruit Loops at 5, which...
No, see, Fruit Loops should be like a 2 seed.
Thank you!
Yeah.
Why is this hard? I just held up a 2. I was just like, clearly a 2.
Yeah.
Clearly a 2. It's not even up for debate.
Yeah.
6, Golden Grahams. I guess. Raisin Bran is 7. Shouldn't even be on the list.
I like Raisin Bran.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I
that when you play
it's
bingo?
Something like when I grew up eating. My mom always had it in the house. Okay. So,
it's the nostalgia bump.
Yeah. Okay. And once they started putting more raisins in it.
Okay.
Like, I'm not like, I don't just like eat raisins normally. Mm-hmm. Raisin Bran is probably the only thing I would eat raisins in.
Well, it's raisins with extra sugar on top of it. Yeah. It's not your normal raisin.
Yeah.
I'll give you that. But I will say it's right where it should be. It is a 7 or an 8 seed.
Yeah, I think a 7 seed.
All right. See, even as a fan of the cereal, you're objective enough to recognize
there
that.
There are plenty more cereals that are way better.
8 seed Wheaties, perfect spot. If it should even Wheaties, be on the list.
No, it shouldn't be. Yeah. Wheaties is awful.
Yeah. The box
it's Raisin Bran without raisins.
Right. The box is cool. I mean, that's
I've
why
got a Wheaties box in the office. Yeah.
Probably North Carolina one?
It is.
Okay. I was like Astros or North Carolina. It's one of the two. Trying to think of recent. All right. So next side of the bracket. Frosted Flakes coming in as the one seed.
Okay. I don't have a huge problem with that.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm a big Frosted Flakes fan. Yeah. That's my hotel.
They're great. That's
my continental breakfast hotel go-to.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, they just got like a little box. I'm like, all right, I'll go with the Frosted Flakes. 2 seed coming in. Captain Crunch. Okay. Okay. That's pretty hard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a legend, you know. 3, Honey Smacks. What the hell?
Boo.
Well, I haven't heard that name in a very long time.
I didn't know they still made them.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Didn't even know Honey Smacks were still on the market. 4 Cocoa Puffs. That should be a 2 seed to me.
Yeah, 2 or 3.
Yep. Cocoa Puffs is strong at the 4. Who we got at the 5? Who we got at the 5? We got Frosted Mini Wheats at 5. Fruity Pebbles at 6. Trix at 7.
Yeah, Trix are all right.
Rice Krispies at 8. Rice Krispies are garbage.
Nice. I like Rice Krispies.
They have no sugar.
You have to add sugar. Definitely. It's like Cheerios. Yeah, you got to add sugar, but man.
All right, well, I'm really glad we got to the bottom of this. I'm glad we're doing the things that matter here on Wild Card Wednesday. As we talk about brackets, obviously March Madness is underway. Yesterday, big story. We're about to get to the opening round, but I got to touch on this. This is wild because we're about to talk about a few different contracts in the sports world, veer a little bit off from the goofy stuff, but yesterday was obviously the groundbreaking announcement, the record contract going to Mike Trout, the largest contract in sports history, $430+ million over 12 years, right? Get this. This is a stat I found before I get to the opening round. Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, and Nolan Arenado. The offseason signings, right? Mm-hmm. They're making a combined $1.32 billion worth of contracts just for those four guys. $1.32 billion worth of contracts for Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, and Nolan Arenado. The Tampa Bay Rays total payroll in franchise history, $1.1 billion worth of contracts for 21 seasons.
Wow.
Those four players made in 1 year with their signing collectively $300 million actually over what the Tampa Bay Rays have spent on their total payroll history in 21 seasons.
How many seasons total is it? Bryce Harper got 13.
Mm-hmm.
Trout got 12, so that's 25.
I feel like Arenado's somewhere around 6.
I want to say he was 8.
Okay.
So 33.
All right.
And then Machado. Who's the other one? Machado, 10 years, 300. So 43 seasons worth of. When you put it like that.
But it's still only 4 guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nuts. Not even half the roster.
Yeah.
Not just half the roster. That's even half your lineup.
Yeah.
That is. Well, it is in the National League. I take that back. It is exactly half the lineup in the National League. But still. Good God.
That's good. Crazy.
What an era we're living in. Tampa Bay. Well, Tampa Bay is Tampa Bay. Sorry, Tampa Bay. All right, it's time for the opening round.
It's time for the opening round, brought to you by VIP Collision.
All right, so we're going to keep you updated on the UNLV coaching search. Got a little rumor swirling. Mike Rhodes, VCU, is the latest name to be thrown into the mix. You got an opinion on that?
It looks, it's looking more and more as if you know, we're possibly looking at a mid-major, maybe a young guy coming up that is, you know, a proven track record, taking teams to the tournament, things like that.
How do you think that's going to go over with the fan base?
Well, with the fan base, you will never do enough to, you know, make your fan base happy. I don't care if they brought in Mike Krzyzewski. There would still be people who would, you know, say they hate Duke and blah, blah, blah. You could bring in Roy Williams. You could bring in, you know, Bill Self. It doesn't matter. You're never going to be able to make 100% of the fan base happy.
Sure.
But, you know, a name that really hasn't been tossed around that much, not known as much, that's definitely going to put it's not going to initially put butts in the seat, which is one of the main reasons that Marvin Menzies isn't here anymore, is because every year the attendance has gone down and down and down. And when you're talking about a 19,000-20,000 seat arena that you're trying to fill, you're not even filling the lower bowl. That becomes an issue.
And the real killer is that the names that have been linked to the job so far, right? Rick Pitino, Thad Mottl. Let's just start with those two.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of people who have excited.
Rick Pitino puts butts in the seat.
100%. And I think Thad Mottl does too. So if that is the case, that's the issue, right? With all these leaks and all these things that are happening, you know, people get their hopes up. And then I actually think a mid-major winner is probably the way to go.
Yeah.
Because we've seen, especially what's the word we want to use for UNLV? Dormant? Rebuilding. I don't know what word you want to use for UNLV, right? But with programs like UNLV, where they need a little kick in the ass and kind of return to glory, that's seemingly, especially in terms of getting into the tournament, that seems to be the way to go. So I will keep eyes on that. The question is when that coach does arrive here, what are they going to be dealing with? What type of roster are they going to have?
Same thing that Marvin Menzies dealt with.
Right? And news came down today. That's a great point. That's a great point, right? Menzies got 3 years, basically two. Because of the January deal, right? So
when he agreed to become the coach, he had two scholarship players.
That's incredible.
On the roster.
And he won. Now, he didn't get in tournaments. He didn't do a whole lot in the Mountain West, but he was improving.
Yeah.
There were wins there. Just throwing it out there, right? Now, we told you about JTT and Tom Way, the fellows that were leaving yesterday. Now we've got news coming down that Shakur Jusin is looking to get out of UNLV.
And that's a big blow.
That's major.
Fifth year senior. Yep. You know,
and leadership.
Yes, that's a man who has, you know, been through it, knows what to expect.
Yeah.
A leader in the locker room, a leader on the bench. You basically got another coach out there on the floor when he's out there. So yeah, this is a bigger blow. This is a major, major blow. Hopefully, you know, the school can get a coach in there in the coming days quickly and maybe see if they can salvage some of these guys, you know, and keep them on
board. That's the key, right?
Yeah.
Let's go. You got to get a coach.
Don't rush for the sake of rushing.
Well, no.
You know, in a perfect world, they would have already had their coach ready to go. So as soon as they fired Marvin, 2 days later, they can announce who they hired. Obviously, we don't live in a perfect world. So, yeah, you're going to have guys leave who weren't recruited by the new coach. But hopefully they can get a guy in there and, you know, he can talk some of these kids into staying.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I got a lot of people saying, well, it's not that big a deal. You know, the real important part is, you know, getting a coach that's going to be able to recruit. It's like, no, it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Leadership, number one, like you said, locker room presence. Also numbers. Jusin basically, I think, essentially averaged 11 points and 9 rebounds a game. Like
pretty much double-double.
That's huge numbers.
Yeah.
Especially for a team like UNLV that wasn't particularly consistent and didn't have a lot that they could rely on. Jusin was one of those guys that you could rely on.
Yeah.
And now it's, I don't know. But it's like you said, it's what a lot of new coaches have to deal with. This is the game that we play in the sport that we live in, right? When I'm talking about the sport, all sports in the NCAA, it is not a perfect world, right? That's what you just said.
Yep.
Speaking of not being a perfect world, the ever controversial Vontaze Burfict. We kind of touched on it earlier in the week when he got released, right? We're like, would you want him on your team?
Probably not.
He's clearly, you know, he's talented. But as you said, or as we said, you know, probably not. And there's a reason why probably not.
Yeah.
He's a dirty player. Mm-hmm. And he says he's not a dirty player. Listen, tape speaks for itself.
Yeah.
You're a dirty player. You are out there to inflict pain and injure people.
Mm-hmm.
You chalk it up as it's a violent game and I play violent. Okay. Yeah, I agree with you, but there are new rules.
There's plenty of violent players out there,
sure.
And they don't twist guys' ankles when they're down in a pile or gouge people's eyes and things like that. There's things like that.
Did he tap some dude in the crotch one time? Yeah, I thought he did that as well.
Yeah, it's just there's too many instances of you just, you know, trying too hard. You know, go out there and, you know, you're trying to hurt other players. Like, that's the only reason you're going out there and twisting someone's ankle.
Yeah.
Is to get them out of the game.
Well, we questioned if you wanted him on your team. Well, Vegas, you got him. Vontaze Burfict, he signed with the Oakland Raiders. He is now a member of the Silver and Black, obviously a franchise that is known to take some chances and to try the rehabilitation route. Obviously, a little bit more of that with Al Davis. But, you know, Mark seems to be cut from that same cloth in a lot of ways. I like that it's a one-year deal. I think it's a one-year deal for around $5 million. That's obviously good. You're not investing too much in a very volatile character like Vontaze Burfict. But, if he can play within the confines of the game, I mean, it's a solid get at $5 million. And if it doesn't work out or if he does something stupid, you can cut bait a little bit.
Yeah. So, you can get rid of him without costing yourself too much.
Right. Other than just the, okay, we tried. We took a stab at it. You know, it sucks that we're out $5 million, but...
Yeah.
You know, that's the risk you take with Vontaze Burfict. I think everyone knew that, and that's why he only got a one-year deal. But if it works out, and he can play with, there is a pathway to rehabilitation for Vontaze, and the Raiders might be the place for him. And he's going to get a lot of playing time. That's probably another reason why he was all down for that. Okay, a couple other news on the signing front. We'll stay within the NFL. We got some MLB news here, real shortly for Mark's Astros. But Clay Matthews, 10 years. Green Bay Packers leaving Green Bay, Wisconsin, taking his talents to a place he knows very well, Southern California, obviously USC grad. He is rejoining the area of Los Angeles, and he has signed with the Los Angeles Rams. The rich keep getting richer, Mark Seidel.
You just took the words out of my mouth. The rich get richer. It's a great pickup. He's a solid guy on the field, a guy you don't have to worry about. Like a Vontaze Burfict going out and doing something stupid,
Look at how dirty Clay Matthews was to start last season.
All over quarterbacks.
Laying his body weight, Mark, on top of these poor, helpless quarterbacks.
God forbid he fall on top of a quarterback.
Remember that?
In the act of tackling them. Christ.
If it wasn't the Patriots who won the Super Bowl, I can't say unequivocally that I can remember right now who won just a month ago. I don't know. I'm loopy like that, right?
Yeah.
But the story of last year for me will probably be forever that start in Clay Matthews and the stupid calls because it was just...
Not knowing what to do.
What am I watching?
Oh, it was brutal, man.
It was brutal. I hope we can avoid that to start next season. I mean, we'll be talking about it plenty, but it was 4 weeks and then it was gone.
Yeah.
Save the 4 weeks. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
It didn't.
Yeah.
All right, so Clay Matthews signs in Los Angeles, 2-year deal. I think he took a hometown discount, too.
Yeah.
He said he wanted to be in Los Angeles. That's the kind of things you do. He made his money.
Yep.
He's got a Super Bowl. Clay Matthews is doing just fine, people.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's real happy to be back in Los Angeles.
Definitely.
I know you're real happy. One of your guys stay on the contract tip, right? It's a wild offseason for football, and I guess we're not in the offseason for baseball, but obviously the news cycle for MLB has been pretty wild.
Yeah.
Alex Bregman, your boy.
Yeah.
Third baseman down there in Houston.
All-star.
Yeah. All-star. Young is all hell. He just got re-upped for, I believe...
6 years.
I thought it was five. Okay. 6 years at $100 million?
$100 million.
That's a steal.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Under $20 million.
Is a guy who... And this isn't just the Astros fan of me talking, but he's a guy who is going to contend for MVP.
Potentially.
For the next four or five years.
If he stays on the same trajectory that he's on, no question.
He started out last year so badly, like the first month and a half, and to finish the year at 290, 50-something doubles, 30-something home runs. I mean, just imagine if he,
And we know why he started cold.
Yeah.
Expectations.
Yep.
You can't come off that postseason and that championship, right?
Yeah.
And then not have a little bit of a pullback, especially at that age.
Oh, yeah.
There's an adjustment. Oh,
he's very confident in himself.
Yeah.
Very, very confident in himself. And he proved it last year. You know, he's a gold glove caliber type third baseman. Yeah. Always played as a shortstop. And, you know, when he came up, he'd only played about 25 games in the minors at third base because Correa's a shortstop. And, you know, and in one full season, you know, made himself a Gold Glove caliber third baseman.
So you got a few people that you need signed next if you're an Astros fan. You got Springer on the docket. You got Correa on the docket. You got Garrett Cole on the docket. You got a few options here. Who do you want to see? Who would you like to see signed next?
I would like to see Garrett Cole signed next.
Really, a pitcher?
You know, he's still relatively young. You know, get him signed up for 5-6 more years. And then I think it's George Springer. It could be flip-flop, could be Springer, then Cole, and then Correa. Correa needs to prove that he is worth what he's going to ask for.
Which is all the money.
Which is, yeah, he's going to ask for one of the $200 million deals.
For sure, no question.
A lot of hype with him. He won the Rookie of the Year. Last year he had a injured back, so he was kind of, you can take that with a grain of salt, but last year was definitely a down year for Correa. He's great defensively, probably one of the strongest, if not the strongest, arms at shortstop. But when your back is messed up, it takes a lot out of your swing, makes you swing differently. So he's said he's 100% healthy, and we'll see if this year can be a little something different for him.
All right, there you go. Coming up next here on the Mac Attack, we got the NHL Player Survey. Best hair, best trash talker, best shooter. We're going to hit that next on the Mac Attack.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell on 920 The Game.
All right, back here on the Mac Attack, 920 The Game. I'm Ryan McKinnell. It's Mark Seidel here on this Wild Card Wednesday, where we take you a little bit off the beaten path. Get you a little bit wild card stories. Okay, so we will be hitting on this NHL Player Association survey, but I've got a lead with something that was very upsetting to Mark Seidel. Mark Seidel has opinions about Hollywood. Mainly, why are we doing reboots? And I'm going to tell you something. Mark, this is a reboot I'm actually mildly excited for. And that is Bill and Ted 3 look like it's coming to theaters in 2020. Alex Winters is returning. Keanu Reeves is returning. Bill and Ted are returning. But you don't seem excited.
Ooh.
Jeez.
The originals suck, too.
Whoa! Whoa!
I'm going to keep it real.
No love for George Carlin? Is your mic on? I can't hear you.
The original sucked too. I had it down because I was trying to test for serious for you and never turn it back on. But yes,
I think they could still hear your discontent through my microphone. Yeah, echoed, boo, boo,
boo. The original sucked. Bill and Ted. Those are like some of the worst movies ever.
Man, I don't know. I guess I'm a little. I was young. We were the same age.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it was like it wasn't meant to be serious. It was goofy. It was meant to be goofy.
Doesn't make it suck any less.
All right, man. You know George Carlin was in it, right?
Yeah, I like George Carlin.
Okay, thank God. Yeah. All right, maybe that's just maybe that's more of it.
Keanu Reeves sucks. Like the fact we're gonna have a 50-year-old Keanu Reeves coming back to act like a stoner. Like,
well,
what?
Hold on. There are old stoners, Mark Seidel. Okay, so this is. I mean, they're not gonna avoid the inevitable or the obvious that they're old. It's gonna be, I would imagine, a story about being old stoners, butt rockers.
Yeah, man.
Speaking of old stoners, Woodstock 50.
Yeah.
The lineup got announced. Also, something you are not a fan of. What is your deal?
I saw Jay-Z.
Okay.
Which would be awesome.
Is this just hip hop or bust for you?
No, it's just, I mean, the only, I'm trying to think who else I saw on there.
Vince Staples, Earl Sweatshirt, if we're talking about hip hop.
No, it wasn't them. Santana, I think, would be cool to see live.
Well, the real cool thing about, you mentioned Santana, which, yes, that would be cool, right? Also playing on this, you got David Crosby, Santana, and Dead and Company, which I believe all three played on the original.
Yeah.
Versions of all played on the original Woodstock. So that's pretty cool. But, man, I don't know. I'm not saying, or no, Fogerty, excuse me.
Fogerty. It'd be cool to see him as well.
So it was Fogerty, Santana, and, Crosby.
Yeah.
Those three played the original Woodstock. They're coming back and playing Woodstock 50, man. Las Vegas own Killers. They're headlining night one.
Yeah, Sam. I'm
not a big Killers fan either.
I don't want to take anything away from them. I just don't understand the the hype around them.
Yeah, neither do I. I've never been a big Killers fan, but nice plug for Las Vegas.
I've seen them. I saw them at the grand opening of the T-Mobile.
Yeah.
When they, the first night they did any event there was the Killers, and I saw them there. And I've seen them at Life is Beautiful.
Yeah.
I've seen them a couple times out here.
Yeah, just not a big fan, which is fine, but it's nice for Vegas. You're right. Friday, August 16th, they're leading. Miley Cyrus is going to be co-headlining that one. Santana, the Lumineers, and I'm a big fan of the Raconteurs. Jack White's rock band, so they're going to be playing that. But that it's also like that. These are stacked nights. So you got Robert Plant on that first night as well. I mean, you're talking Led freaking Zeppelin. Yeah.
Yeah,
John Fogerty's on that night. Oh, Run the Jewels are also Run the Jewels and Robert Plant on the same night on the same card along with my. Like, I love that pairing, right? So Run the Jewels is in there. This is just a really, really deep lineup for almost every night. Like the second night, Dead and Company, Chance the Rapper, Black Keys, Sturgill Simpson, Greta Van Fleet, Portugal the Man, Gary Clark Jr. I just showed you that. Yeah. Hey, that new Gary Clark Jr. album, folks. Yeah. I'm not. It's called This Land. Go out and get that. I've been wondering where a good rock album has been for the last while. I'm a big fan of Ghost. Like, they have been there, but like politically, socially, where has rock music been, and who's been saying anything?
Yeah.
Gary is one of those guys that's been prototypical blues player for a long time, and he kind of broke the mold with his new album. Go out and check it out. So that's that second night. A lot of great Margot Price is on that second night. And then the third night, Jay-Z, you said it, right?
Yeah.
Imagine Dragons, I'm kind of surprised by that, but another Vegas name thrown in there. Halsey, Cage the Elephant. I saw Cage at last year's Life is Beautiful. I want to say? I think it was last year's. Their stage energy and presence is off the charts. They're a great
Cage
band.
The Elephant, that's not the same as Cage the Rapper.
No. No, right? Dude.
Okay. I didn't know.
You're pulling from your Eminem history. Yeah. Remember when Cage and Eminem had beef like in 99?
Yeah.
And then Common on that Sunday.
That'd be dope, too.
So, yeah, Vince Staples, Common, Earl Sweatshirt, and Jay-Z all on Sunday night. So, big night.
I would go to all 3 days just to see Jay-Z the final night.
I get it.
Like, that's how dope that would be to, you know, see Jay-Z in concert.
I saw him July 3rd or July 4th, 2009, here in Vegas, at the Palms, at the Pearl. Got there early, had front row. It was awesome. It was like right before his last Blueprint album came out, Blueprint 3. Full. It had like three different drummers, full, like multiple bands. It was sick. But the coolest part, LeBron James joined him on stage for like half the show.
No doubt.
Basically was his hype man.
Yeah.
Knew every word to every song and was up there, you know, getting super hype. But the coolest thing was he had this crazy diamond necklace. Now, it was understated, but it was like, it was thinnish, but it sparkled. Yeah. And I spent the entire show heckling LeBron, trying to get him to give me his chain, just hoping he would have like a lapse in judgment.
Uh-huh.
And then he wanted like a great viral Vegas story. And like LeBron James throws his chain into the crowd. I'm being serious.
And then you got murdered as you walked out for it.
Oh no, I would have left immediately with like, I would have went to security and be like, hey, I need to be walked to my car. No, seriously. I've clearly thought about this too much. Like I'm clearly delusional. And to which I saw that chain. I was like, LeBron, I was like, chain. I was like, give me your chain. LeBron.
Yeah.
Me. I just, you know, I wanted to be that. I wanted to win the lottery. It would have been like a $500,000 chain.
That would have been dope.
Yeah. And then you get to sell it. And
this is LeBron's
chain. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it adds to the value. All right. So I tease it. Let's get to it. This NHL Players Association poll, they poll like 400 players anonymously, and they ask them for responses, you know, on things like who is the most underrated player? Who is the most difficult player to play against? The most underrated player is Florida's Alexander Barkov. When you look at the year that he's had and that no one watches Florida, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Most difficult player to play against, coming in at 31%, Connor McDavid. Also makes sense. Maybe the drop here is surprising.
Yeah.
From first to second, 30% for Connor, 16% for Sidney.
So basically, Connor McDavid is far and away the hardest player to play against.
Yep.
And that's because he's so fast.
That too.
He's abnormally fast.
With a really quick release.
Yeah.
This follows up on Connor. Which player would you select to start a franchise with? 60% say Connor McDavid, only 18% say Sidney. Sidney second at 18%. Connor comes in at 60%.
Well, and Sidney Crosby he's younger than Connor McDavid's younger. Yep. Sidney Crosby has a concussion history, injury history.
Yep. Austin Matthews coming in at 4%, Patrice Bergeron at 1%, and Nathan MacKinnon at 1%. Who is the best trash talker in the NHL? No surprise here. I would imagine Brad Marchand coming in at 21%. Not so much talking, maybe more the licking.
Yeah.
That's kind of his gimmick. He likes to lick people's faces. Drew Doughty, Los Angeles, hated rival, Angeles Kings, coming in at around 12%. But Ryan Reeves bringing up third with 5.5%.
Good
makes
for him.
Sense. Makes sense.
Definitely.
If you ever watch Ryan, he jaws. He likes to. He's smiling a lot. You know who else I'm surprised that might not be on that list, and maybe it's just a status thing or it hasn't been here long enough. But Marshall, that dude never shuts up.
Yeah,
like, he's on his own team half the time. Like that guy. That guy is all over the place. Funny enough, who was the game's worst trash talker? Brad Marchand comes in at 12%, which I like. Okay, so who would make the best TV analyst once they retire? PK Subban leads that group at 10%, which if he did an all-star special that was incredible. Like that dude is meant to be on TV, so I think we will be seeing him on TV. Third place again, Ryan Reeves. Now 2.5%, but I can see that.
Yeah,
smooth talker.
I love these lists because it's players that are voting on other players. They know the best.
Yep.
You know, this isn't a media poll or anything like that. So they know who the best trash talker is. They know who's the hardest to play against.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'd imagine they would know pretty well who has the best atmosphere. And this is what's really great to me, because you would think that, hey, the players want to pick their own teams, but this is anonymous. They're not going to pick their own teams because, let's be honest, there's only a few places that really represent in terms of atmosphere every single night. This has to be an every single night sort of thing. You got Montreal, they're psycho fans out there. Toronto, they're psycho fans, but it's just not the same. It's a little bit different. We've heard about Nashville, right? I'm from Chicago. The atmosphere in Chicago, especially since about 2007, 2008, probably a little bit later, 2008, has been stellar. Just been arguably the best in the league. But there is no arguing with the players, Mark Seidel. T-Mobile Arena, right down the street, crushed this poll. It is by far and away the leader as the best atmosphere in hockey. 42.5%, almost half of the players polled said that T-Mobile Arena has the best atmosphere in the NHL. Coming up second and almost half behind that is the Bell Center in Montreal. I just want to... Do you know how insane that is? Do you know how insane that is? To have a city that was said that hockey will never work there. Not just hockey, Mark Seidel. The pro sports aren't going to work in Las Vegas. It's just it's too much entertainment, gambling, lifestyle. That couldn't possibly work.
Yep.
But, well, not only is it working, it's crushing a city like Montreal, who has been steeped in hockey culture and history for 100 years.
Yeah.
And that is not hyperbole on my regard.
Uh-huh.
That is the absolute God's honest truth.
Yeah.
To have T-Mobile come in and to have you, Las Vegas, be the best fans in the best atmosphere. That's what you're saying. When you say best atmosphere, it's not the arena.
Yeah.
It's you. It's the listeners. It's the people out there going to these games. And it's also, I think, a credit to the Vegas Golden Knights to understand how an arena in 2019, 2018, whatever, should run.
Yeah.
There is never a break in the music and the action.
Nope.
It's a continuous party. Throughout the entire, it's happening in the intermission. It's happening before the game, and it's happening after the game. That plaza is popping. Mm-hmm. It's like, I've said this before, it's like a block party. You just move from house to house, and you're kind of just, oh, what you got going in there?
Go have a good time.
Exactly. It is unlike anything. I've never experienced anything like it in sports. It's nice that it's not just hyperbole, and it feels big and it feels special, but turns out it actually is.
Yeah, and it's you know, players again that are doing this vote, and nobody knows better than the players who are actually, you know, the guys that are visiting that have to come in here and go up against this crowd and things like that.
Yep.
Nobody would know better.
Final on this, what might be surprising, best ice in the NHL. Bell Center leads pretty. Edmonton and the Bell Center, or Montreal and Edmonton, are at the top at 29% for the Bell Center and 20% for Edmonton. But interesting, coming up in fifth place at 5%. So 5% of the players polled said T-Mobile Arena has the best ice. And this is amazing because we're in a hot climate.
Yeah, we're in the desert.
Right. Phoenix has some of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But Vegas and T-Mobile Arena.
Well, I remember during the playoffs last year that they had problems.
Oh, it was 109 degrees.
Yeah, because
outside.
it was so hot outside that they had issues, and they were having to come patch the ice during intermissions and breaks and things like that. So,
yep.
You win some, you lose some, I guess.
You win some, you lose some. That's right. Speaking of losing things, we're going to head to break real quick, but when we come back, we lost many thousands of years ago. And this is Wild Card Wednesday, so the story is going to make sense. Many thousands of years ago, we lost the woolly mammoth. Turns out, might be making a comeback. We're going to be talking about the next on the Mac Attack.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell on 920 The Game.
Remember Jurassic Park, man?
Yeah.
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 Got like slightly offended.
Yeah.
1993. The reason, Jurassic Park is the reason I couldn't watch Star Wars as a kid. I couldn't go back.
Yeah.
I didn't see Star Wars. I mean, I saw it like on TNT and TV, like cable, like occasionally, but like it wasn't my childhood, right? Like my childhood was like CGI and like Terminator 2. Like I saw Judgment Day in the theaters. Like that was nuts.
See, Star Wars was my childhood.
I get it. I didn't have that. I don't know. I just missed it. And by the time I would have been interested, 9, 10 years old, maybe, Terminator 2 had been out. Jurassic Park had been out. And the special effects were just beyond anything we had ever comprehended. Jurassic Park special effects were so good that they hold up today.
Yeah.
I use Terminator 2. So does that movie. It is crazy 25 years later that those movies still hold up. Okay, well, it turns out Jurassic Park might not be just a movie. This is a wild story coming out of Hong Kong. 90-year-old Japanese scientist, Akira Iritani, who has been for decades trying to... I don't know what... I don't know what word you want to use. Cloning's not the right word, but he's trying to resurrect dead cells of the woolly mammoth. He has been obsessed with the woolly mammoth. The woolly mammoth reigned on planet Earth about 4,000 years ago, became extinct. So after decades of trying, this Akira Iritani, he essentially admits that he almost gave up. But in 2012, scientists in the Siberian permafrost found a very well-preserved 28,000-year-old baby mammoth that they named Yucca. Now, that is what he thought potentially could kind of be that window into what he's looking for, right? So this is what Iritani said. He said, "I've been trying to find dormant mammoth cells for 20 years, but as I'm now 90, I thought I should just give up and accept death." That's nuts to me.
Yeah.
When you think of someone, a scientist, that clearly this has been his quest for his whole life.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to die now. I failed.
Yeah.
I can't do this. But they find this yucca. They find this 28,000-year-old baby mammoth. And with what he's been working with, it looks like this is now more of a possibility than ever. And here's where I'm getting at. Here's what he continued saying. "I'm so happy with the latest research. It feels like Yucca was waiting for me to find her." And here's the cool thing. In the experiment, they pulled some of these cells. What they're trying to do is get them to breathe, get them to interact.
Yeah.
You know, they found this thing in the permafrost. There's skin cells and hair on there. I'm not a scientist. I'm kind of, you know, flying here by the seat of my pants, but I think I have the gist of it. So in the experiment, using a process known as nuclear transfer, Japanese and Russian scientists collected 88 nucleus-like structures from Yucca's muscle tissues, and transfer them into mouse oocytes. So these are cells that divide to form an ovum or form a female reproductive cell in the ovaries. So Iritani used these live cell imaging techniques and got these dormant cells and essentially got them to breathe a little bit and got them to work. So it might be some hope. He said, "I was looking under the microscope at night while I was alone in the laboratory. I was so moved when I saw the cells stir. I had been hoping for this for 20 years. So he's 90 years old. So this is exciting from a standpoint that it can be done. That's essentially what Jurassic Park was, right? Uh-huh. They found blood or DNA in an old, what
mosquito.
Was it? Mosquito. That was
trapped in amber.
Tree amber. Yep. Exactly. So this is kind of similar to that. Old woolly mammoth trapped in permafrost in Siberia, which is about, you know, some of the only place you're going to find this thing. Here's the exciting part, is that they're clearly showing the possibility of this being able to happen. At least you're mixing with the cells and you're kind of regrowing things that have been dead for 28,000 years, right? That woolly mammoth yucca isn't the only animal found in permafrost. Like, we haven't really been looked. We can't get into permafrost.
Yeah.
It's miles deep in some cases. Yeah. You've got to wonder what else is out there. Someone might find a saber-toothed tiger someday.
That'd be dope.
T-Rex. Who knows what we might find? Yeah. Because we just don't have the resources to track everything.
Yeah.
Now, this also doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to have mammoths. We're a far way off from that. Then when you get to it, you know, when you get to the nuts and bolts of it, right, it comes down to, okay, let's say in 20 years we can clone woolly mammoths. Then it comes down to, okay, should we? There's this school of thought that says...
The moral conundrum.
Right. School of thought says, one school of thought says, you know, nature's... God's intent to take them off the planet. It was nature's course to take them off the planet. I guess my counter to that would be, And I know I'm the robot guy, right? I'm sitting here dragging on robots and, you know, maybe we should pump the brakes. Yes, we can, but should we, right? This is kind of a similar conundrum. But I guess I'll just say this. I am for automation and robots. I want to see it thought about and talked and discussed and done so in a not a fast way so society can adapt and we're not all left jobless in 20, 30 years, right? Yeah. We can gradually progress into automation and what it's going to take to feed that job force, right? I kind of look at this in the same way. Like, I feel like if you're going to use the counter to, well, it was God's intent or nature's intent to take them off the planet, don't mess with nature. It's like, well, what is what we're doing now? Humans are nature.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not the intent of the universe? If this technology is there, that means we're capable of it. We were gifted to it by God, by the universe, however you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So then wouldn't it also be our duty to use what means we have to then do that? Like, who's to say that they just weren't, that these animals weren't meant to go extinct thousands of years ago just for us to bring them back later and save them? Who's to say they were ever, it was God's plan or nature's plan to have them wiped off the planet? Maybe it was the plan to freeze them for a few thousand years and then bring them back in a more healthy, sustainable, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if the technology's there, it's going to be really hard saying, don't bring a saber-toothed tiger back.
Yeah.
Or don't bring a woolly mammoth back.
A saber-toothed tiger, I think, would be, you'd be bringing back an animal that poses a huge risk to humans.
Yeah, they all will, you know? Essentially. I mean, but, you know, we have the ability to bring these things back, and if we don't do it, they are wiped off the world, presumably. We haven't discovered any new worlds with animals that we know about yet. I mean, I'm sure they're out there, but we don't know them, right?
So we
have the ability to bring something back that hasn't been, I don't know. It's interesting. I'm not saying there's a right or a wrong answer. I'm just endlessly, you know, intrigued by all of this because it's our movies are coming to life right before our eyes.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park is coming to life right before our eyes. Star Wars is coming to life right before our eyes. You know, space travel, the future, robots, AI. It is wild. All our parents want to know is, where is our flying cars? Oh, you missed a generation, but we're there.
Yeah.
We're getting there. Those Uber taxis are, say, they're about to pop off in like 5-6 years.
Yeah.
They're going to have like stations where they fly around and dock out of like high rises. I don't know.
That'd be dope, man.
Get ready, buddy.
Yeah.
Get ready. Will it? I already have enough problem with taxi drivers and stuff. Final one. Aunt Becky, Lori Loughlin. Apparently she appeared in court this week.
Mm-hmm.
Very surprised about the seriousness of her case. Get your hands off me. Where are my people?
When you break the law, you know, and you commit felonies, you go to prison.
Hmm.
That's what happens.
Yes, even if you live in Hollywood, Lori Loughlin.
Yeah.
All right, program reminder, no Mac Attack tomorrow or Friday, but we are going to have the NCAA tournament on this station starting 9 to 9 tomorrow. I will be down at the Westgate with Cofield for Cofield & Company on ESPN from 3 to 6 tomorrow. So with that note, I will see you all Monday.